STS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot comp.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right-side patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people.
On RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Tuesday night edition of the show, 16th of November. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you today?
I am exhausted from doing basically nothing.
Ah, very interesting. I'm exhausting from watching this farce continue on air day after day after day.
That's exactly what I mean. I've been sitting here all day watching the TV and and checking websites and doing everything I can to find out what's happening with the Kyle Rittenhouse situation. The jury went into deliberation at 9:15 this morning, and we're gonna be spending the entire first segment on the Rittenhouse trial. And before we jump into that, let me just tell folks what else we got coming up on tonight's show. Diane, you're covering the business of COVID-19.
Yes, and I'll be honest with folks. We were supposed to do both segments that we're doing tonight. We were supposed to do them probably about a week and a half ago. But as everybody knows, we were having major server issues. So we're catching up a little bit on articles that people have requested we actually put on air.
Yeah, so we had people say, hey, you didn't do this article or you didn't do that article on your show. Okay, well, tonight we're gonna.
Right.
So you're covering the business of COVID-19. I am covering the bowl of granola generation.
I love that title.
I got to tell you, I kind of do too. Okay. You know, it's just one of those kind of odd things, but it is what it is, and you'll find out about that all coming up. But we want to spend the first 30 minutes, instead of quick hitters, we need to talk about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial and what's going on there. Now, it was just announced, just a couple of minutes before we got on the air tonight, that the judge has told the jurors to come back tomorrow morning and begin deliberations again at 9 o'clock tomorrow.
Now, what strikes me is very strange, Craig. Hold on a minute. With that, these jurors are being allowed to go home. Now, if you honestly think they're not going to be turning into the media and listening in on everything and watching it, you're living in la la land. I want to know why these jurors weren't sequestered overnight.
That's a good question, and I don't know really why that is. And I don't know, are they actually going home? Are they putting them up in a hotel tonight?
No, they said they're dismissed.
Dismissed from the courthouse, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going home. Could be going to.
Fox said the word home, so I can only go by that.
Well, then maybe that's what they're doing. I agree with you. I think it's kind of ridiculous given all the situation that's surrounding all of this. Quite frankly, I'm a bit puzzled by everything that's gone on today. I expected a fairly quick decision, having watched the trial, having heard the evidence, having listened to the witnesses, watched the videos that they put into evidence, okay, I thought, well, okay, so they got five charges that they have to deliberate on, but I thought this is going to go pretty quick. I was pretty surprised when they hadn't finished by lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we got on into that 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock central time, I thought, you know what? Something here ain't right.
Yeah. Well, what I see it as is the lynching of Kyle Rittenhouse. What they're doing is they have politicized a clear-cut case of self-defense. They are trying to make Kyle Rittenhouse the payback for Trayvon Martin, for Michael Brown, for George Floyd. Let's hang the white boy. That's what it appears like, because BLM and all of those groups are threatening violence. Okay. And also, the left, what is the left defending? They are defending a convicted robber. And guess what, guys? A convicted pedophile. This is who they're defending.
Let's you know, since you bring that up, and I think it's a good point to bring up. And let me, before I get into this, let me just caution people. We have no idea what's going on in that jury room.
No.
Okay. We have no idea. We can only speculate. All right.
Correct.
And, you know, it's hard to put yourself in the mind of the jurors. There's seven women, five men. One person is of color. We don't know which color in the crayon box they might be, but
right.
There's one person of color. Now, what's going on in there, we don't know. But we do know that they deliberated from 9:15 until about 5:45 this afternoon, and they have been unable to reach what they call a consensus. Now, I think that's the wrong word to use, because it's not a consensus that you're looking for. It's a unanimous decision. The decision has to be unanimous.
Correct.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. Let me say something. The ping that people might have just heard was, I just got some breaking information that the jury didn't know about and should have been informed about. It seems that Gage Groskowitz had a criminal history dating back decades.
Well, yes. Now, this is what I want to get into. You mentioned that you know, all three of these people have a criminal history. Joseph D. Rosenbaum is a convicted felon. He's a sex offender, actually a level 3 sex offender, who failed to maintain his sex offender registry status.
Right.
Okay. Anthony Huber is the Rosenbaum was one person that was killed. Anthony Huber was the other person that was killed, a convicted felon, convicted of assault and battery, domestic abuse, false imprisonment, and being a convicted felon in possession of a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gage P. Groskowitz, hard name to say. He's the one that got shot in the arm, almost had his arm vaporized.
Okay. Right.
Also a convicted felon, felony burglary, a probation violation, and again, being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. These are the three people that were shot. All three as white as a piece of paper.
Yes.
Kyle Rittenhouse, white.
Yes.
But this is all about race, somehow.
They made it all about race, and they forget one key important fact. Good, decent, hardworking people of any race, creed, color, or nationality don't riot, they don't loot, they don't commit arson. You know who does? Miscreants and thugs.
And thieves.
And those with their hand out for free stuff, of course.
Miscreants, thugs, and thieves.
Yeah. This is what these people are defending. In my opinion, and I know I'll, you know, get some feedback for this, Kyle Rittenhouse did us all a favor.
In some way. Yeah, in some way he did. But let's look at that. What'd you call him? Something thugs and thieves?
Miscreants and thugs and thieves. Yeah.
Joseph Rosenbaum, miscreant, convicted sex offender. Mm-hmm. Anthony Huber, thug, convicted of assault and battery and domestic abuse and false imprisonment. Right. Thief, Gage Grosskreutz, convicted felon, felony burglary.
Right.
There you go. Miscreant, you go. Thug, and a thief.
Yeah, and I'm also sick of hearing, well, meaning Kyle, he didn't live in Kenosha. He lived in another state. I hate to tell them, but where he lived in the other state was literally smack next to Kenosha, number one. Number two, his father lives in Kenosha, along with his best friend, Kyle's best friend, and Kyle works in Kenosha. So he had every business being in Kenosha. Remember, Kenosha is also a city where they sort of defunded the police and tied the police's hands behind their back. If the police had been allowed to do their jobs, Kyle might have not even been there.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I mean, his house in that other state, you know, I mean, the prosecution made it sound like he lived on the other side of the planet.
Right.
Okay. 17 to 20 miles away.
Right.
That's closer than I live to a loaf of bread. Okay. I mean, honestly, yeah. I'm 21 miles from the nearest loaf of bread.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's nothing. That's nothing, all right?
No, it's a suburb. Basically, it's a suburb.
It's a suburb in a different state, but it's just barely in a different state.
Yeah.
You know? Here's what's going on, folks, if you're wondering. The jury has been dismissed for the evening. They're going to return at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and give another go at it, so to speak. I'm guessing, speculation purely.
Okay.
I think you got one, maybe two jurors in this thing right now that want a guilty verdict on one or two of the five counts.
On anything, just to say he's guilty.
Okay. The rest of the jurors, the other, let's say 10 or 11, are saying, look, this is self-defense, right? If they can't reach a verdict tomorrow, my guess is that the judge will declare that they are hopelessly deadlocked,
mm-hmm.
at which point he will declare a mistrial, and then it will be up to the prosecutor, that little weasel, whether or not to put together another trial.
Well, let's put it this way. That prosecutor who picked up, you know, the 847 and pointed it at the jury, that man should be stripped of his law license immediately.
That was the dumbest damn thing.
That man is a clown. He actually, in veiled terms, he kind of threatened the jury in a way.
Yeah.
And also, we now have a media that is pushing a narrative of violence. They want violence. The Democrats and the media want this to be violence. Let's destroy the white areas. Let's do this. Let's do that. You got BLM there. No black person was involved. What the hell is BLM there pushing this violent narrative for?
Well,
really? Why?
I can't answer that. Okay, because it doesn't make any sense. You know, all of this started because a black guy got shot by a cop. Okay? That's how this all started. And then, of course, you know, the BLM and Antifa and the goons, they all move into Kenosha because this happened in Kenosha. And it results in night after night after night of riots, looting, arson, mayhem, assault, battery, you name it. Okay. And this is why Kyle Rittenhouse goes to Kenosha, because he wants to help. He wants to help protect property, protect people, give first aid to people, put out some of the fires if he can.
He did.
And he did. But all three people that got shot by Kyle Rittenhouse were white. Kyle Rittenhouse is white. The BLM has no business involving themselves in this.
At all.
You know, it's ridiculous.
But what this whole thing is, this is not about race. Why is everybody making this about race?
Because everything.
There's nothing racial. Right, because everything in this country, thanks to the Democrats, has been under the umbrella. Everything is racist. If you do this, you're a racist. If you don't do this, you're a racist. If you don't do the other thing, you're a racist. But if you still do this, you're still a racist. It's insanity.
A week and a half ago, Pete Buttigieg was giving a press conference, and he was talking about bridges and roads that are racist.
Yeah. Isn't that an interesting thing? I didn't know concrete or blacktop can be racist. Oh, wait a minute. That's it, Craig. Streets are paved in blacktop. There you go.
Bridges? Bridges are racist? We've heard
they
from...
They have blacktop on the road.
I don't give a holy hoot. We've been told that trees are racist.
True.
Okay, I mean... You know, everything is racist. That's according to the liberals.
Snow is racist. It's white.
It's white. It's got white privilege.
Yeah.
You know, let me throw out a thought here, because I am now, while you know, yesterday and this morning, I was certainly leaning toward self-defense, and he's going to be acquitted, and that's going to be that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I am leaning toward a hung jury and a declared mistrial. Now, it will become up to the prosecutor whether or not to retry this case. But let me ask you this.
Okay.
At this point, with all of this going on, with all the media focus on this, national media focus on this, where can Kyle Rittenhouse now get a fair trial?
First of all, he cannot get a fair trial. And to do this to this young man, who is obviously reacting, self-defense, the pictures, the videos all show it. This is cruel and unusual punishment for a kid that was only defending his own life. This is very, very unfair. As a mother, if this was my son, I'd be fuming. I'd be all over the media raising holy hell about this. And his mother was. She was on Hannity, I believe it was last night. This is the railroading of a young man for political reasons. That is all this is. And who they're railroading this young man for is pieces of garbage.
Well, I mean,
these three men were the lowest scum you can find. A pedophile, an abuser, someone who imprisons someone. How much lower can you get in society's dredges?
Yeah, but you can't, from a legal standpoint, you can't take that into account here, because Kyle Rittenhouse had no idea who any of those three people were.
That's why I'm saying that, because the jury is not allowed to know certain aspects of these people.
Well, but you know, what they've done in the past really had no bearing on what they did that night. Okay, I mean, they chased Kyle Rittenhouse. They tried to attack him. They hit him with a skateboard. They hit him with a rock. They lunged for his gun. One of them pointed a gun directly at Kyle Rittenhouse from about a foot and a half away. I mean, that's what this case is about. This case really isn't about what kind of crappy people these three were.
No. There's also a little aspect you're forgetting. Kyle said that the pedophile came at him in a sexual manner.
Well, but he did that night. That's my point. He didn't do that a year ago or 2 years ago or, you know, whenever he was convicted of sexual
But he was committing sexual misconduct that night.
Well,
by approaching Kyle in a sexual manner. This man is a convicted, registered sex offender.
But
that's not being brought up anywhere during the trial.
Okay. It doesn't pertain to the event where he got shot. Okay. He got shot. You know, that guy got shot lunging after chasing Rittenhouse across the parking lot and lunging at him. That's when he got shot. Okay. And clearly in the video, that's self-defense. I don't care that the prosecutor was saying, oh my, he was so far away. He was 4 feet away. You know what? When you're running and lunging, 4 feet is less than a blink of an eye.
Let me tell you something. On my Facebook page, I have a thing that says, here's the only defense needed, case closed, free Kyle. It's a picture of the man, the first one, the pedo, with his foot basically slamming into Kyle Rittenhouse's face. No. That's not 4 feet away. That is on top of him.
That guy is not the pedophile. The pedophile was Rosenbaum, who got shot after he chased Rittenhouse through that parking lot, and Rittenhouse got cornered between a couple of cars, and as the guy lunged at him, as Rosenbaum lunged at him, Rittenhouse squeezed off four shots in under a second.
But here, Craig, no, in this picture, it's, you know the picture I'm talking about.
I know the picture.
Kyle has the gun pointed in the air as the guy's, whoever this man is, the guy's foot is in his face.
Right.
Okay, this is insanity. This is total self-defense.
Yes.
This is what our country has become, folks. This theater, this nonsense, you can't even defend yourself?
Yeah, you have
to. That prosecutor actually had the audacity to stand up there and said, you can no longer defend yourself if you've done this, this, and this?
Well, according to the prosecutor, you can't defend yourself until somebody kills you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, what
but
that's going to do you?
What you have to realize here is that there are two separate shooting events. The first one was Rosenbaum, and that was in the in that parking lot that was about a block and a half up the street from where the second event took place. The second event is where he shot two people, killing one and wounding the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, two separate events. A minute or minute and a half apart, whatever it was. But, you know, the situation now is, if there is a mistrial, and it's leaning that way, hung jury mistrial, I don't see how Kyle Rittenhouse can now get a fair trial anywhere.
Well, from what I understood, the judge can say, I want to phrase this right. Something with prejudice.
Yeah, he could declare a mistrial and dismiss it with prejudice. Now,
right.
I don't know if he can do that on a hung jury. Maybe he can.
I'm not sure. But all I know, if this young man is not totally found not guilty, folks, this is the beginning of really losing our country. If we can't defend our own person against someone out to hurt us, to kill us, whatever, we've lost more than you realize. If we are going to cater to miscreants and thugs, allow Black Lives Matter to determine if a city's going to burn or not, we're in serious trouble.
This is as clear-cut case of self-defense as I think I have ever seen.
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean, I've watched all the videos, all the angles, the drone video, all of this stuff. Okay, mm-hmm. Everything that they presented in court, I watched. And if I had to guess, I'm going to say the holdup here is on the Rosenbaum shooting, the first one, first shooting that night. I'm gonna guess that's where the holdup is. But
no, I think it's on the, they want to convict him on anything so they can say we got him. I think it's on actually one of the lesser charges. Well, I don't think it's on the self-defense per se. I think it's on one of the lesser charges so they can say at least we got him. See, he's guilty and he'll have to serve minimum time or whatever.
Yeah, it might be. You might be right. It might be on one of the manslaughter charges. But my guess is it's whatever charge it is. It's the one that's It's one of the ones that's related to Rosenbaum. The other two are so clear cut. But to me, the Rosenbaum one is too. I mean, I watched that video, and I know if you're running and the guy you're running at isn't running and you're 4 feet away, you cover 4 feet in less than a blink of an eye.
Of course you do.
You know, and he's lunging at Kyle Rittenhouse. He has already told Kyle Rittenhouse he's going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
What do you expect anybody to do, much less Kyle Rittenhouse?
Yeah, I mean, this is a total miscarriage of justice. This is political theater of the very worst kind. And look, let's be honest here. If he's found innocent, the element's going to riot. If he's found guilty, the element's going to riot.
Yeah.
Kenosha's going to be in trouble no matter what happens. Now, the National Guard is there, thankfully. But you know, Craig, the only way to stop this nonsense all over the country, the rioting, the looting, the mayhem, you know the only way to stop it?
Well, I do.
Shoot to kill.
Yep, that's it.
And I'm talking about from our side, from the National Guard. You kill a couple of them, you'll see how fast all of this will stop.
We will have to wait until tomorrow.
Yeah.
At some point tomorrow to find out what's going to happen.
Yeah. This thing just has me so angry.
It's shocking. It's shocking. But I'm just telling you, if it comes down to a hung jury, there is no way to retry Kyle Rittenhouse and have a fair trial. This thing has been all over the media. I mean, 24/7, all over the media. You will not be able to find an impartial jury anywhere that hasn't heard about this case.
Well, there is one good here. Send the trial to Florida. He'll get at the fairest trial he can get any place.
But that doesn't matter. Okay. It's not that he gets the fairest trial he can get. It's whether or not he can get a fair trial. And what I'm saying is you can't have a fair trial if your entire jury pool knows about the case.
Well, they'll say, oh, we can find someone somewhere who hasn't heard about this.
No, they
can't. Remember the OJ trial? This is kind of like, you know, OJ part two.
Well, In the 30 seconds we've got left here in this segment, I'll just tell you, I put up a thing on my Facebook page today that says, if Kyle Rittenhouse is not acquitted, it will be the greatest miscarriage of justice since O.J. Simpson was acquitted.
Yeah. But you know something? To me, this is even worse because this is a kid. And I look at it also from a mother's point of view. If this was my son, do you know the torture this kid must mentally be going through knowing he has to wait another day to find out his future?
I know. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The biggest difference between this case and the OJ case, in the OJ case, we didn't have any video.
Right.
This one, we've seen it all. It was self-defense. All right, so we've made it here to the bottom of the hour. That means we got to take a quick break, folks, get a couple of station IDs in. When we come back, Diane's going to be talking about the business of COVID-19. And then about a half an hour from now, I'm going to talk about the bowl of granola generation. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
To Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. It is the Tuesday night edition of the show, and if you miss any part of it, just go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, hit the podcast button, and there we are. You can be one of the pod people.
Yes, and thank you, pod people. We're gaining more pod people every day.
We're on a mission to create pod people on a weekly basis. And we're doing it. That's the best part of it. All right, Diane, so I don't know if anybody has even actually heard of COVID-19, but you have put together an op-ed regarding the business of COVID-19, because like you and I always say, follow the money.
Right. And let's start by saying COVID-19, China's little gift to the world that keeps on giving, a gift that has killed over 700,000 Americans since first coming to our shores. And while there are now vaccines available against the virus, the fact is that none of the vaccines currently in use have been proven to be the end-all be-all to said virus. And why? Because not only are booster shots now recommended for the already fully vaccinated, but because breakthrough cases and corresponding deaths are on the rise amongst the fully vaccinated, which included former Secretary of State General Colin Powell, who was the latest person of name to be hospitalized and died from an engineered virus, a virus that needed an antidote more so than it ever needed a vaccine. Simply, COVID is still not under control, and no mandates issued can bring a definitive end to a disease that will continue to mutate as time goes on. And let's be honest here regarding the COVID vaccines themselves by saying that when President Trump first initiated the call for a vaccine to be produced via Operation Warp Speed, he did so to try to bring an end to the ongoing pandemic. However, while Trump's cause was indeed noble, it must also be remembered that the vaccine manufacturers themselves are in business to make money, with the health aspects of what they're manufacturing always coming in second to bottom line profits. And while profits and profit margins are what a successful business is all about, remember that no business is solely designed to be a charity for millionaires, billionaires, or even for the federal government itself, no matter the tax break or write-off they might garner at year's end. Also, remember that when you're talking about a business, even a business regarding the health, safety, and welfare of the American people, said business still requires a monetary investment to help kickstart their operation. And in the case of the COVID vaccines, even though, for the most part, the government was footing the bill, what was with the most drug makers accepting government grants? Those grants themselves came courtesy of we the people's taxpayer dollars, which by definition means we too would expect a return on our investment. Simply, Craig, any and all, including our government, who put money into the creation of the COVID vaccines, do indeed rightfully expect a return on their investment, which is basic economics 101 in action.
Well, let's look at it this way. Isn't there basically a two-tiered profiting system that's kind of set in place on this? And it's nothing like what we haven't seen before. I mean, this is kind of standard operating procedure, isn't it? Can you simplify it as far as how the profits are made and who's making the profits or who should expect to make profits on this?
Right. And in basically in simpler terms, it's just like if you or I invested money in the stock market, wouldn't we expect to see a monetary gain on whatever we invested in? We surely would. Same goes for those who invested in the companies that actually produce the vaccines, as in those who knew all along that once the COVID vaccines were officially approved and went to market, that huge cash cow rewards in the area of hundreds of billions of dollars would be both the company's and their investors' rewards. And said monetary rewards would then filter down to actual pharmaceutical company stockholders, which we have since found out includes members of Congress, 48 of whom have stock in Pfizer, 47 with stock in Johnson & Johnson, and includes over 50 of those in Congress who attended a private briefing concerning the danger of COVID-19, and who then invested upwards of six figures or more each in the three different pharmaceutical companies that produce the vaccines used here in our country. And this surely reeks of insider trading, as it seems that those in Congress were indeed given a heads up, so to speak, as in buy now, profit later advice, before the first vaccine was even produced, officially approved, and even before clinical trials regarding safety and long-term effectiveness had been completed, which, by the way, still have not been, as all the approvals were granted under the catchphrase emergency use, which means that the vaccines were approved without trial completion. Now consider this cash cow. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine is priced at less than $20 per dose, yet Pfizer expects sales of the vaccine, a vaccine developed in conjunction with the company BioNTech, to total about $15 billion out of the $46 billion Pfizer expects to garner in total from its pharmaceuticals by the end of this year, which is $5 billion up from 2020 totals of $41.9 billion, which equates to a profit margin of nearly 30%. And those dollar numbers will probably go even higher now that Biden has mandated that all Americans be vaccinated. Not that all of us will comply, nor should we have to, for the caveats of the jab seem, to we the unvaccinated, to far outweigh its supposed benefits.
Now, Diane, let me just ask you a quick question here, because, you know, you're talking about profits. This is the business of COVID-19. Hasn't Pfizer come up with a slick way of maybe doubling or maybe tripling their profit margin in this?
Well, sure. It's a little gem from Pfizer's own CEO, Albert Bourla, who recently stated, as it admitted, that, quote, genetic mutations occur naturally during virus replication and spread, and therefore there is an increasing probable scenario that it could become necessary within the next few years to boost COVID-19 vaccinated patients with a vaccine encoded with the newest spike variant, end quote. Translation, even more sales and hence more profits for Pfizer and the other vaccine manufacturers to be made from what would then be the newest incarnation of their vaccines. And you can see that here, in regards to Moderna, a company relatively new to the pharmaceutical industry, what with it having no FDA-approved products for sale as recently as 2019. This company had only $60 million in revenue in 2019. However, in 2020, Moderna garnered $529 million in government and other grant revenues, as well as $200 million from early-on sales of its vaccine. And now by this year's end, Moderna is predicted to garner a revenue of $16 billion from just its vaccine sales, as well as seeing its stock shares going up by over 187% within the last 12 months alone.
Holy crap.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just looking at those numbers, Diane. They had $60 million. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
Okay, but now they're looking at a revenue of $16 billion. Holy crap.
$16 billion. Holy and their stock crap. Shares, Craig, going up 187% just within the last 12 months that the vaccine has been out. That's amazing.
Excuse me while I go change my pants.
Yeah, excuse me. I wish I had invested in Pfizer.
Jeez.
Okay, but simply, folks, the jab is not just a cash cow, but a monetary windfall. And like I previously stated, not only for those who manufacture the vaccine, but for the government, investors, and stockholders as well. What with the average American being forced to be vaccinated, yet not being able to share in the wealth, so to speak. So how does our government make money from the vaccine itself? Simply by making use of the advance purchase commitment contracts that assured the vaccine manufacturers that there was a sufficient demand for all vaccines. In other words, the U.S. government basically underwrote COVID-19 vaccine development costs for our three main vaccine-producing companies in exchange for licensing fees, which itself adds up to a very pretty penny. In fact, Johnson & Johnson had a $1 billion contract for 100 million doses of their vaccine. Moderna had contracts total $4.95 billion to produce 300 million doses, and Pfizer had advanced purchase contracts totaling $5.97 billion for 300 million doses, even before the first vaccine was ever administered. Imagine the licensing fees collected. A profitable turn of events, I'd say, especially when the government now gets to specify exactly how the grant monies are spent and are used, when and where they are used, and how, in the case of the manufacturers, they will report said use. Quite simply, the federal government now has an ongoing contract with the U.S. vaccine manufacturers where they get to monitor every move made to assure that the terms of the grants are being fulfilled to their the government's satisfaction. And so logic alone would also dictate that our government's now funding for global vaccinations would enable us to fully capitalize on our original monetary investment via said licensing fees, as COVID will eventually go from being a pandemic to a vaccine manageable epidemic, not unlike the seasonal flu, which itself demands a jab for it not to become a pandemic. Now, Craig, the dollars made here is astounding. For flu shots are given on a yearly basis because, like the flu, like now being proven with COVID, they morph into different variants of itself almost every year, thus equating to a different version of both the flu and now the COVID vaccines being needed every year.
You know, they always say, With great power comes great responsibility. This can't all be blue sky and sunshine being blown up our dresses, can it? I mean, when you got this much power, when you got your hands on the golden goose, it seems to me there could be some corruption coming.
A little bit. Okay. But even with current profits being made, there appears to be a downside on the horizon. What with the World Health Organization, you know, folks who, now trying to push ever so hard for equity in dictating to whom, when, and where the COVID vaccine should go. Claiming that without an additional U.S. commitment of between $15 to $26 billion spread over the next 3 years to support global vaccine distribution equally, they want it distributed equally, meaning to prioritize undeveloped poorer countries, that our and the wealthier nations' efforts to reopen the global economy could be jeopardized. But really, how can that be when undeveloped countries still mired for the most part in their own tribal past, basically contribute nothing to the global economy? Just another effort and threat by WHO to dictate to us their version of how the world should be. And so the bottom line is this: President Trump's altruistic reasons for pushing for a vaccine have seen the Biden administration, with its vaccine mandates, turning altruism into simple money-making operations for some, while at the same time gaining, via mandates, control over we the people. And now with Dr. Fauci and the FDA saying that the three main vaccines and their corresponding boosters can be used interchangeably, which I would think is not a very good idea, as each company's formulation, while similar, are not quite the same, the profit margin will in turn ratchet up. And this is, never mind the fact that there is yet another option to help bring the pandemic under control, except for the fact that the FDA is deliberately stalling the approval of said option until at least November 30th, leaving some ill and others who will die in the interim. And why? Because it's not in lockstep with the Democrats' agenda, as it would drastically cut hospital reimbursements for what is now extremely expensive treatments and usually needed long-term hospital stays. And here I'm referring to Merck's new antiviral pill, molnupiravir, a pill that has been proven in major clinical trials to cut death and actual hospital administrations for high-risk patients by 50% or more. And while that's a good thing for those who still are at COVID's mercy, as it translates into hospitals getting far less reimbursements for a $700 per cost treatment involving the administering of a twice-a-day batch of four pills for 5 days, which in moderate to mild cases can even be done at home, compared to other COVID treatments that require way more expensive intravenous transfusions, what with the transfusion setup alone costing $1,000, with a course of monoclonal antibodies costing $2,100, and with remdesivir costing upwards of $3,100, coupled with a mandatory hospital stay. And I'll tell you something about this this pill incident in a bit here. And so even with other options available in the COVID fighting arena, the fact is that it's more advantageous to the agenda to force folks into getting three jabs plus a booster. After all, we have to support the government's COVID monetary money-making machine. Now, don't we? Sarcastically said, of course. Case closed. And I'm stumbling, folks, because I'm still furious about Kyle. Anyway, the thing about the Merck vaccine, they applied back in September for approval for their pill. In the meantime, Pfizer has come out with almost a copycat pill to Merck. The government is pushing. They've pushed Merck back to November 30th or beyond for even the first step in approval, and they're fast-tracking Pfizer. Why are they fast-tracking Pfizer? Because so many in Congress have stock in Pfizer.
Well, look, with any business enterprise, okay, and let's face it, COVID is a business enterprise. You've made that Absolutely. Very clear. There's always kind of a silent partner lurking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to guess who I think the silent partner in the business of COVID is right now?
Silent partner?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you a hint. There's more than one. There's actually about 2 million silent partners right now.
You're not talking about China, are you?
I'm talking about illegal aliens.
Oh, illegal aliens, of course, because they bring in the disease. They go out and spread it. People have to get the vaccines. They have to get treatment.
They got
to
get boosters.
They don't allow herd immunity to kick in.
They got to get boosters. They got all this stuff, right? And I don't know. I'm guessing. I'm speculating. Okay, but when Biden's putting all these illegal aliens on airplanes and flying them all over the country, including to the great state of Florida, he's doing it mostly.
DeSantis is going to put a stop to that.
Well, yeah, but he's doing it mostly. He's flying them mostly to red states. We talked about that the other day.
Blue states. Yeah.
No.
Oh, you mean Biden's flying?
Biden's flying them to red states.
Right.
Okay. Contrary to popular belief, I do know what I'm saying. He's flying them to red states. By and large, the red states are doing better with the COVID situation than the blue states, right?
Mm-hmm.
So spread a little extra COVID into the red states. Got to have more vaccinations. Got to have more boosters. Money, 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 money.
Of course. Of course. But what really got me about this, here it is, Merck has something. They've had it since September. It's already gone through clinical trials. The FDA won't even look at them until the end of this month. But yet they're already fast-tracking Pfizer.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't this Merck pill, isn't this being used in Europe already?
I believe it is in some areas.
Yeah, and
they
we can't,
you know, the hell with this FDA approval, basically.
Well, they're not, you know, Merck is a German company,
right?
And Europe and you know the UK and you know all that, they're not bound by our Food and Drug Administration. They can do whatever they want. And
exactly.
if I'm right on this, I think this Merck COVID-19 treatment pill is already in use in various parts of Europe.
And proving very successful.
Yes. Yeah.
But here it is. No, because, you know, not enough members in Congress, I guess, own stock in Merck to make it profitable for them.
Well, they all got in on the ground floor of Pfizer.
Through insider, what I call insider trading, because they were at a meeting and given heads up on things. Guys, this is criminal actions going on here.
Yeah, but you got the...
Insider trading is criminal.
Yeah, but right now the fox is guarding the hen house. What do you expect to have happen?
True.
You know, I mean, like, But, I mean, look, all these members of Congress, they got in on the ground floor over there at Pfizer, and Pfizer's gone from $60 million to $16 billion. I'm just shocked. That, good God.
Yeah, but what gets me mad is through all this, they are not allowing herd immunity to kick in. Well, and I'm going to get into that with my whole vaccine article up for this Friday. That's the last of my catch up.
There's a primary reason why they won't let herd immunity take over, because not only does herd immunity kill the cash cow, it also kills the golden goose.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And you know, what people don't understand is, okay, we have all these people in this country that have been vaccinated, yet COVID is still going around. Yes, a lot of it is coming from the illegals. There's no question about that. However, the reason some of us aren't getting it, here we are, we're going into 2 years of this. Some of us have not gotten it at all. We go about our business. We go out in public. We eat out. We shop. We go maskless. We have good immune systems. Maybe we've been exposed to it and our immune systems are so good that we have fought it off. Maybe we've had such a mild case that one day, we don't feel good. The next day, we're fine. But it's still herd. It's a form of herd immunity.
Right.
We need more of this. Yes, you need a certain amount of people vaccinated for herd immunity to start kicking in, but we've reached that level. We're way past that level. These booster shots are, the reason the booster shots are not needed is because the vaccines have worn off. Well, if the vaccines have worn off, let the herd immunity kick in. Don't keep making people dependent on something that's not really working.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's fear. It's to keep people in line. That's all it is.
Let me just tell folks here. If you've been wondering why this COVID thing is dragging on and on and on and on, you know, remember, you go back a year and a half, and it was 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Right.
Right. Okay. Then all of a sudden, as Diane has so graciously laid out in this op-ed, it became a business opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And not under Trump. Not under Trump.
No. This,
under Biden.
Yeah, this all kicked in with Biden. Okay.
Right.
So if you're wondering why this is never going to go away, follow the money. Read Diane's op-ed, The Business of COVID-19. Now, she published this a couple of weeks ago, but there are still two places you can get it. You can go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. Yeah, go to the op-ed section. You'll find it, The Business of COVID-19, or just scroll down, look at some of the other stuff she's got on the blog. All right? Or you go to rspradio1.com, and it's right there.
Yeah.
Get the link and share it. Let people know what's really going on. That the people that are making money would rather you not know about.
Right. Yeah. When I found out the numbers about how many people in Congress ahead of the vaccine suddenly invested hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in Pfizer, it sent up my antenna immediately. If that doesn't send up yours that something isn't right here, this disease has been turned into a cash cow for certain people.
Yeah. It's pretty clear. It's pretty clear. Yeah, if that doesn't get your antenna up faster than Pfizer's Viagra, nothing will.
Are they a Viagra manufacturer too?
They started Viagra. Yeah, that's a Pfizer product. That was originally a Pfizer product.
Okay, I had no idea.
Yeah, and that, you know, I know that because Pfizer back in the day was they had a big plant and business operation where I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. And you know, and we in Lincoln, once Pfizer came out with Viagra, we knew what was keeping the capital of our state up.
Yeah. Folks, you don't know what his, the capital of his state, the building looks like.
Go look it up. Google it, folks. We affectionately call it the penis of the prairie.
Oh, okay.
The business of COVID-19. You can find that at Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or rspradio1.com. With that, we've gotten to the end of the segment here. Got to take a quick break. When we come back, the Bowl of Granola Generation. Stay with us. More Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, getting you through a Tuesday night edition of the show. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Again, if you miss any part of the show tonight, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow. Become a pod person by clicking the podcast button. All right, so you and I both published the articles we're covering tonight on the 1st of November. So these
are how long we've been having shoutcast problems.
So these are leftover articles. They've been in the back of the Right Side Patriots fridge for going on 2.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, they're still current, right?
We kept them in Tupperware.
Yes.
Keep them fresh. All right, the Bowl of Granola Generation. Look, we as a nation are getting ready to unleash upon the world a generation of the most wussified young adults that have ever walked this planet. The truly frightening part of it is that they will become the future leaders of our towns, cities, and our country. While we've all heard of Generation X and Generation Y and Z, I suggest what's coming is the Bowl of Granola Generation. Those that aren't fruits and nuts are flakes. Just a couple of weeks ago, an article caught my eye, and while on the surface it seemed kind of ridiculous to the point of being nearly pointless, I quickly realized there was much more to it than surface-level idiocy. Oberlin College in Ohio was once considered to be a damn good institution of higher education, but sadly, it has now become just another asylum of higher indoctrination. There's a student there Peter Frey Witzer, who, given time, will be afraid of his own shadow. For now, there's something else that has him quivering in fear. It seems that the Oberlin College Asylum of Higher Indoctrination was about to do some maintenance work on their dorms. Peter Frey Witzer lives in one of those dorms. The scheduled maintenance involved putting radiators for heat into his dorm, which happens to be classified by the Oberlin Asylum of Higher Indoctrination as a safe space dorm. According to Peter Frey Witzer, quote, "I was angry, scared, and confused. Why didn't the college complete the installation over the summer when the building was empty? Why couldn't they tell us precisely when the workers would be there? Why were they only notifying us the day before the installation was due to begin?" You see, Peter Frey Witzer, as it turns out, is beside himself because the maintenance crew that was set to install the heating radiators was most likely to be cisgender men. I know. I think this would actually be a good time to fake gasp in horror, if you're up to it. Cisgender men, for those unafraid of genetic facts, Diane, are men who identify as men, and that is apparently just too much for this particular fruit, nut, or flake to handle.
Well, it seems that this Peter Frey Witzer has problems of his own.
You think?
As to decide, you know, remember, guys, there are 57 now genders. I'm not sure he actually knows which of the 57 he falls into. I guess he hasn't looked at, you know, down his underwear yet to see which gender he falls into. But it really seems to be, you know, eating away at him here.
Well, I don't know which gender he actually falls into either, but I think I cover this pretty well. You see, Baldwin Cottage, Peter Frey Witzer's dorm, is set aside by the Oberlin Asylum of Higher Indoctrination for women and transgendered persons. I have no idea whether Peter Frey Witzer is a woman pretending to be a man pretending to be a woman, or any one of the other 57 total genders the Bowl of Granola generation pretends there are. But whatever he, she, or it thinks he, she, or it is, he, she, or it should probably self-identify as a dehydrated apricot, a cashew, or some sort of bran. In recent op-ed penned by Peter Frey Witzer, he stated, and I quote, "In general, I am very averse to people entering my personal space. This anxiety was compounded by the fact that the crew would be strangers, and they were more than likely to be cisgender men," unquote. Here, I suspect I should pose the obvious question, how can a college-age student possibly actually be averse to people entering his, her, or their personal space? Obviously, he, she, or it isn't. Not really. He, she, or it is either pretending to be averse, or he, she, or it has been brainwashed into being averse. While I understand there are such people in the world that have a significant issue with being around people, they generally don't voluntarily place themselves in places that invite such close interaction with others on a daily basis, if not an hourly basis. A college, or in this case an asylum of higher indoctrination, is just such a place. Classrooms are full of people. Common areas like the student union or other places like the library or a cafe are also full of other people in close proximity to one another. In fact, I suspect there are few places at Oberlin College where students aren't close, excuse me, to other students, indoctrinators, or perish the thought, maintenance workers. Diane, clearly, Peter Frey Witzer is not a good candidate for group therapy.
Yeah. Well, this guy, this girl, this it, whatever.
Whatever.
You know, you guess. I'm looking at the picture. I kind of have a guess what this is, but I'm not positive yet. He was so afraid of a real man entering the room that he had to scurry off, didn't he?
Well, yeah, the day of the heating radiator installation, Peter Frey Witzer did what any he, she, or it would do when averse to having someone else entering his, her, or their personal space. He, she, or it left to go somewhere else on campus where there were, no doubt, lots of other people in close proximity. When Peter Frey Witzer returned, he asked the head of the maintenance crew, presumably via email, because Peter Frey Witzer would have been averse to being close enough to actually have spoken to the cisgendered man if the work had been completed. He was told that the job was done. However, somebody would be back in a few days to check on the installation. In his op-ed, Peter Frey Witzer said, quote, "Sure enough, they were back the next day. I felt mildly violated and a little peeved," unquote. He, she, or it felt mildly violated? What in the hell is mildly violated? Either you're violated or you're not. Being mildly violated is sort of like being kind of pregnant. But since the bowl of granola generation pretends to actually believe that men can get pregnant, who knows? The real truth here is that Peter Frey Witzer is not a lone wolf. Not that he self-identifies as a wolf, but given his tendency to pretend, maybe he does. But there are plenty of others who, like him, her, or it, are equally as out of touch with reality in the bowl of granola generation. Reality is a foreign concept to the bowl of granola generation. But here's the deal. People, whether they claim to be whatever they claim to be in the moment, like Peter Frey Witzer, aren't really averse to having other people in their personal space, and they don't really need a safe space dorm to maintain their lollipop and unicorn existence. They aren't even really afraid or mildly violated or a little peeved. What they are is intolerant.
Yeah.
What seems on the surface to be a hypocritical situation is really just par for the course when it comes to the liberal Marxist bowl of granola generation. While they rant and rave and froth at the mouth about how everybody is intolerant of them, they themselves are completely intolerant of anyone who isn't exactly like them. That's the bottom line regarding Peter Frey Witzer. He, she, or it lives in a dorm set aside for women and transgendered persons, set aside for people just like him, her, or it. All was well with Peter Frey Witzer as long as Peter Frey Witzer was surrounded by people just like Peter Frey Witzer. But the moment that crew of men who actually claim to be men, people not like Peter Frey Witzer, was set to enter the bowl of granola generation believes to be the most diverse place on earth, a place that in reality is not diverse at all, Peter Frey Witzer and so many others just like him, her, or it started to feel mildly violated. Diane, the rest of the planet must tolerate them, but they are averse to tolerating the rest of the planet.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think Peter Frey, whatever his name is, I think by looking at the picture, I think this is a woman transferring herself into becoming a man. However, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, you could cut things off. You can have things added. You can mess with the insides a little bit, but you cannot change your genetic code. However Peter Frey, whatever his name is, was born, that's how he remains. He was born a woman, the transgender person part of it. If he was born a woman, guess what, honey? You're still a woman.
Look, I agree with you. I really do. But, you know, I don't see how people like Peter Freiwitzer are ever going to be able to function in the real world once they're released like a plague of locusts into this country. Every little thing, every person they come across is going to leave them feeling mildly violated. And in their minds, it's the rest of us who are the problem. The actual problem is that in short order, it will be people like Peter Freiwitzer who are making the rules and the laws that the rest of us will be expected to follow and obey. And the prospect of a nation is dire in that sort of intolerance. In fact, on the very day that the tale of Peter Freiwitzer made the news, U.S. Assistant Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine became the first openly transgender four-star officer in the uniformed services when he, she, or it was sworn in as the first female four-star admiral in the U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps. To be clear, he is the first man to openly pretend to be a woman to reach that rank. Levine said in a statement, quote, "This is a momentous occasion, and I am pleased to take this role for the impact I can make and for the historic nature of what it symbolizes. May this appointment be the first of many like it as we create a more inclusive future," unquote. Inclusive? In the way that Peter Freiwitzer is inclusive of people that aren't just like him, her, or them? Inclusive to the point where being around anyone who isn't pretending as they are pretending makes them feel mildly violated? Please. This Levine guy is a four-star crackpot. Yes. Now, maybe you still don't see this as being as foreboding and as dire of a situation as I see, but if you need any more convincing, might I just point out one final thing? The bowl of granola generation now has their very own admiral. Are you feeling mildly violated yet?
I'm actually feeling disgusted. This is, guys, we have allowed this to happen in this country. This has been allowed to go on. This is against everything we should be taking as serious issues. We are being laughed at. We are a laughing stock. The word inclusive is a laughing stock. Equity is a laughing stock. The cisgender male, blah, blah, blah. This is all laughing stocks.
Well,
this is not the America I grew up in.
No, and that's kind of the point of this commentary.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be people like Peter Freiwitzer who are going to be making the laws that the rest of us have to abide by.
Are they really, or are they going to be hiding, you know, with their therapy puppies and never coming out?
I'm just telling you, eventually, by attrition.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and let's face it, when it comes to this quote unquote Rachel Levine.
Oh God, that's a joke. Know, a joke.
Can I just say that Crunch is more of a captain than Levine is a woman?
I agree.
I
mean,
so here you got a he, she, or it. Okay. I'm not sure what's pretending to be what here. I'm kind of with Diane. It's kind of difficult to tell.
Yes.
Okay. But, oh my God, there's going to be somebody in my dorm that is a man who claims to be a man. How can I be expected to be around when this happens?
Why can't they just call them men? What is this cis men?
Cisgender. Well, that you know, you can be a cisgender man or a cisgender woman. A cisgender man, I had to look it up. I'll be honest.
Oh, okay.
I had to look it up. A cisgender man, CIS, cisgender.
Okay.
Cisgender man is a man who is a man who claims to be a man. A cisgender woman is a woman who actually is a woman who claims to be a woman.
So what is the word cis? Why can't it just be man or woman?
I don't know. I don't make these rules.
Well, you should know these things.
I don't make these rules. Peter Frey Witzer makes these rules.
Oh, dear God, are we in trouble? We are so in trouble in this country, and I just don't know what, you know, is going to happen here if we don't stop with this social bullshit.
Well, and that's what it is. That's what it is. That's why I say, you know, the bowl of granola generation. That's the title that I slapped on this commentary, which, by the way, you can find at thenationalpatriot.com or rspradio1.com. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I call it the bowl of granola generation is because you look at a bowl of granola, and those that aren't fruits and nuts are flakes.
That's a great line. I like that one.
And that's where we are right now. I mean, that's this entire generation that I'm talking about. Peter Frey Witzer just happens to be the star of the moment.
Right. Right. You know? There are others, well, I'm sure, up and coming.
Look, Peter Frey Witzer, whatever he, she, or it wants to call itself, right, can pretend to be whatever it wants to be.
Right.
Okay? But don't expect me to pretend. Right along with you. I'm under no obligation to pretend that you're something you're not.
Exactly.
I mean, now, if I met what looked like a woman that was really a man, and I had no idea, okay, I wouldn't be pretending when I called that person her. Right, but when you run around in public and make it publicly known that you are transgendered, what you're telling me or anybody else with a working brain cell is you are pretending.
Right, that's all it is pretending.
You know, I'm not under any obligation to pretend along with you to make you feel better.
Right.
If I know you're pretending, you're pretending.
Yeah, you know what it is? Everybody has a right to be what they want to be. But I have the same right to be what I want to be. And that includes not accepting this nonsense. If I think there are two sexes, that's my right.
No. No, I'm going to disagree with you there. And seriously, I'm going to disagree with you there. You don't believe there are two sexes. There are two sexes.
There are two sexes, correct.
Okay? It's not a matter of what you believe. It's a matter of what is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, even on my home planet, there's only two.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. You know, I mean, I don't believe there are two sexes, only two sexes, because there are only two sexes.
There are only two sexes. Now, guys, you know, we're smart enough to know there is the rare, very rare cases of babies born with both sets of sexual organs.
Michelle Obama.
Yeah. However, how the decided will, usually what that baby will become is they do a genetic test.
Right.
And see what the genetics of the child are, and they align the sex to the genetic, and the child lives a perfectly normal life.
Well, and, okay. You know, let's face it, you might be born with both sets of plumbing, indoor and outdoor.
Yeah.
Okay, but your DNA is your DNA.
Exactly. You cannot change your DNA. You can play act all you want, folks, but you can't change the way you were born. It's now, just impossible. And men cannot become pregnant. Men cannot be mothers. They could be fathers, but they can't be mothers. And that picture of Buttigieg with the phony breasts, breastfeeding his a newly adopted twin daughters, that was revolting. Seriously.
You know, look, here's what I'm going to say about the whole gender thing with being born with both sets of plumbing. If on the very, 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 very extremely rare chance that your DNA shows both, you're not a third gender. You're a combination of the only two that exist.
Right. But your genetics will only point to one gender.
Right. You know, but what, you know what I'm saying? I mean, but if you're going to be mildly violated by the fact that there is somebody doing work in your building that's a man who claims to be a man, you can't possibly function in public.
No. Well, Craig, I'm mildly offended by idiot Democrats.
I'm more than mildly. Well, maybe you do. get you a bottle of bubbles and a therapy puppy and some coloring books.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah. All at taxpayer expense. You know, right. I mean, this stuff is such a pile of horse crap. Look, folks, we're just about to the end of the show. Let's wrap things up kind of the way we opened things up. The Kyle Rittenhouse jury is still deliberating. They've gone home, apparently, for the night. They'll reconvene at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. They'll give it another try. But right now, I'm starting to lean towards a possible hung jury and a mistrial declared because of a hung jury, at which point it becomes up to the prosecutor whether or not to refile charges and try it again. But I don't think, and I said this earlier in the show, I don't think now there's any place in this country where Kyle Rittenhouse could get a fair trial.
And I'm thinking, honestly, that they'll cave on one thing just to say, see, he was guilty, to try to diffuse the element from behaving badly. But I don't think it will diffuse anything. I hope it is a hung jury and that the judge says with prejudice, but I don't think that'll happen either.
You know, it's going to be an interesting situation as we spend day two tomorrow watching this, waiting for something to happen. What happened there in Kenosha in this incident was so clearly self-defense on the part of Kyle Rittenhouse. There shouldn't be any question. They should have had this figured out before lunch today.
This should have been an open and shut case. This was clearly self-defense. It has me so aggravated that this freak show, this political circus theater is being allowed to go on. This looks so bad for our country.
Well, you know, when one prosecution witness after the next for the better part of 10 days was actually making the case for the defense, then did you, right, as a juror, you got to look at this thing and go, well, it's got to be self-defense because every one of their witnesses said so.
Right, exactly.
Forget the videos, forget the still photos, forget all of that. When the prosecution keeps bringing in one witness after the next and every one of them literally tells you it was self-defense, the Rittenhouse acted in self-defense. What are you supposed to think as a juror?
No, I mean,
somebody's screwing this thing up.
Somebody is screwing it up big time. And I'm sorry, when that prosecutor picked up that weapon and pointed it at the jury, That case should have been thrown out immediately.
With his finger in the trigger.
With the finger in the trigger. I think the whole case, there was grounds right then and there for throwing out the case.
It's going to get real interesting tomorrow.
Yes.
We'll keep an eye on it, and I guarantee you, whatever happens, we'll be talking about it this Friday.
Oh, we sure will.
With that, Diane, you and I have run out of time. What do you say we say goodnight?
I say we say goodnight. Goodnight, guys.
Goodnight, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday.